Hello, I'm Rosemary Martirana, Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, NJOHSP, and you're listening to Intelligence Unclassified. This podcast is exactly what the title states, unclassified information about current trends in homeland security for the state of New Jersey, as well as educational information and resources for your awareness. Although it is produced every month, we aim to stay on top of current events and will often offer additional content. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Twitter at NJOHSP and Facebook. All links can be found in the show note and on our website, www.njohsp.gov. The events of 2015 highlight that New Jersey and the United States face a terrorist landscape more dangerous than any since the attacks of September 11th in 2001. From the brutal and tragic attacks in San Bernardino and Paris, the year saw a dramatic rise in multi-operative, small-scale attacks on civilian soft targets, all with little to no warning, as well as the decentralization and diffusion of the global terrorism movement. This new dynamic makes it extremely difficult for law enforcement and homeland security professionals at all levels of government to detect and deter attacks like San Bernardino, Paris, Philadelphia, or Boston. Now, more than ever, state and local coordination is critical to combating the evolving and diffuse terrorist threat we face. Homeland security has become hometown security, and OHSP is working diligently with our partners to stay abreast of terrorist capabilities. This three-part series was adopted from a webinar our office hosted in January and is intended to expand on some of the themes presented in NJOHSP's 2016 threat assessment, which is available on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Episode 1 discusses the increase in competition between the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, and Al-Qaeda that we expect to see in 2016. Episode 2 takes a hard look at domestic extremism throughout the United States, while the third episode explores the concept of blended extremism, or individuals that draw their inspiration from multiple radical ideologies and tailor these beliefs to ultimately form a unique worldview to advance their violent goals. You may recognize the voices of our Analysis Bureau Chief, Dean Barada, and our Deputy Bureau Chief, Kim Brown, in this podcast, who were featured in our HVE speaker series. But before I turn the mic over to them, thank you for your continued support to the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Dean Barada, and on behalf of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, I'd like to welcome you all to our January intelligence webinar. For those of you who have not been here before, we try every month to produce an unclassified webinar about 60 minutes in length, or no more than 60 minutes in length, on a variety of homeland security topics. So today what we're going to be talking about is our recently published New Jersey Terrorism Threat Assessment Review. What I'd like to do is introduce your speakers today, one of whom is me. My name is Dean Barada. I am the Chief of the Analysis Bureau here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. And with me is Kim Brown, who is the Deputy Bureau Chief of the Analysis Bureau here.
Hello, everyone.
So we didn't plan that introduction there. What we wanted to talk about is a little bit beyond simply regurgitating what it is that the threat assessment has. It is available for download. You can download that, read it yourself. What we thought would be important is sort of talk a little bit about the trends and sort of the deeper meanings that we think go along with this threat assessment. As we were thinking about the annual threat assessment, we really came up with three broad themes that we think sort of cut through the specifics of individual groups that we were ranking and thinking about. And we'll talk about each of these in turn. The first one is competition between Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So, like I mentioned, June 2014, ISIS announced the creation of their caliphate. This was some time in coming, but it sort of marked a formal and official break with Al-Qaeda. And what we've seen since then is sort of an increasing battle between the two, both sort of a rhetorical one and actually sort of a physical one between these two groups as they vie for the title of sort of leader of the global jihadist movement. And one aspect of that is something called outbidding. And this is just a theory. Well, I shouldn't say just a theory. It's a theory about how groups, terrorist groups in competition, interact with each other. And the thinking is that these groups, in order to get more recruits, get more notoriety, get more funding, will outbid each other in terms of severity of attacks and lethality and brutality. So we can't say that we know for sure this has happened, But one example could be the Paris attack. So in the beginning of the year, January 2015, there was an attack against the magazine Charlie Hebdo in Paris, and that was inspired by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, one of Al-Qaeda's affiliates. November 2015, there was a complex attack against multiple targets, and evidence increasingly looks like that was not just inspired by, but directed by the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. So if you buy the theory of outbidding, this certainly looks like it could be a very good candidate for that. Same city in the same year. And if you're ISIS and you are sort of trying to outbid and demonstrate to the larger community that Al-Qaeda is sort of yesterday's news and a spent force, what better way than to say, oh yeah, you inspired somebody to carry out an attack? Well, we're actually going to do it. And we're going to do it in multiple places, and we're going to do it over a longer period of time, and we're going to have a much higher body count, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that could be one example of it. But just important to note that we don't know for sure that's going to happen. And so this leaves us with a question of how would we know?
And I think we would know, like, some indicators for us to know if there was actually outbidding going on is if the maybe messaging was very directed towards each group. And I'm going to bring it to DT for a little bit. So we see that with some white supremacist groups, when they're actually calling out other groups saying, oh, they're not legitimate, you know, they're not a real white supremacist group. Or, you know, they're a bunch of wannabes. And so, again, that is telling other people, don't join that group. So I think we would start to see something similar to that with these two.
And, you know, one other important thing to note about this competition, I heard somebody joke about this the other day, and it's true. The only people who really care about this competition are the two groups themselves, Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And I think the people that study them. And the analysts. Because what we see overall, and this is really interesting, is people in the West, people in the United States, sympathizers of these groups, they don't seem to see this competition as that big of a deal. And so when we look back to the January Charlie Hebdo attack, you may remember there was an attack against the magazine. And then a day or two later, there was an attack in a Jewish market in Paris. And the guy who carried out that attack did it in sympathy for the Charlie Hebdo attackers. What's interesting is the Charlie Hebdo attackers were inspired by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. The Jewish market attacker was inspired by ISIS. So even though those two groups are in open combat in some places of the world, when it comes to sympathizers, Western sympathizers, those distinctions kind of go away. And I think also the San Bernardino attacks were inspired a little bit by Al-Qaeda and their affiliates, a little bit by ISIS. And so we're seeing sort of a very complex mix, and this competition just doesn't seem to translate down at the street level. So for those of you who are law enforcement agents, I used to work street gangs. I try to bring back a lot of things to street gangs. I remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was the big competition between the Bloods and the Crips. And everyone say, oh, if you're wearing blue in a certain part of the neighborhood, look out, you're in trouble, or vice versa if you're wearing red. But on the street level, you have two best friends who grew up together and hung out together. One just might have joined the Bloods, one might have joined the Crips. They still hang out on the weekends. And so whatever's happening between LA and New York, or this side of town, that side of town, when it gets down to individual members, personal relationships can trump group ideologies. So that's important to know.
So you've just listened to the series on Al-Qaeda and ISIS and the increased competition we intend to see between the two groups in 2016. So I have Dean Barada here with me now, and I wanted to follow up with a few other questions. So Dean, based on what we've just heard, do you anticipate seeing Al-Qaeda and ISIS rectify their differences and perhaps cooperating in 2016?
So there's very few times as an analyst that you can say that something is definitely going to happen or definitely not going to happen. But I'm pretty confident that I can say that the chances of an Al-Qaeda and ISIS reconciliation in 2016 are about as close to zero as you can get. Right now, both leaders have been engaged in a pretty serious war of words in terms of their propaganda, both the leadership and a lot of the sort of keyboard jihadists out there as well. So I just don't see the possibility of a reconciliation in the short term. In the long term, things get more hazy, but that would probably have to involve at least one of the senior leaders dying or somehow retiring or stepping out of the picture.
All right, so let's roll with that example. Let's say tomorrow Zawahiri retires from Al-Qaeda or, unfortunately or fortunately, is killed. What would happen then? Do we anticipate that Baghdadi would be able to capitalize and take over the Al-Qaeda franchise? Or do we anticipate AQAP stepping up to the plate and taking over and filling the void that Zawahiri has left behind?
So I think up till pretty recently, the assumption has always been that sort of AQAP would take on a leadership role in the event of Zawahiri's death. But they've had their own leadership problems in the past year, so I think that is less clear. I think in that scenario, if Zawahiri were to die, that would sort of bode ill for the AQ brand. Right now, a lot of the affiliates have really more influence and more relevancy than the core has demonstrated. So I think you could very well see multiple people vying for control of the AQ brand. The affiliates could spin off and become independent actors. But I think the net winner would probably be ISIS because they would be able to demonstrate still sort of a global reach. They would still be able to demonstrate owning some territory, even if they've lost some over the past year. And if you were a sort of a prospective jihadist looking for a team to back, ISIS would just look more and more like the preeminent one in the scene.
So if we anticipate seeing an increase in competition between Al-Qaeda and ISIS in 2016, what indicators are intelligence analysts looking for that would demonstrate this increase?
I think you'd see it manifest in a couple of ways. First, just in terms of propaganda, I think you'd see even more strident and more explicit distinctions that the groups make amongst themselves, you know, about each other. I think you'd see that across the areas where they're competing for sort of regional or territorial control. So whether that's Afghanistan, Indonesia, Libya, West Africa, or the Arabian Peninsula and Syria, I think you'd see more and more open fighting between them than we're seeing now. But finally, I think ultimately what would be most of concern for us is we'd see increased plotting by the two groups. You'd see them devoting more and more resources to conducting terrorist attacks in the West or in other core areas. And I would expect you to see them, if they were competing, you'd see them trying to sort of poach into the other groups what they consider their core territory. So you might see Al-Qaeda attempting to move in more forcefully into the Syrian and Iraqi space. Libya lately, you might see more. For ISIS, you'd probably expect to see them operating outside of that core territory and moving more into the West, where Al-Qaeda has always been sort of the number one enemy, perceived international terrorist enemy.
Great. Thanks, Dean, and thanks for the follow-up. If you haven't heard already, we'll be doing a more in-depth webinar on this topic tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And if you miss it, check out our website at njohsp.gov. Stay safe and Jersey strong. Thanks.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.